Welcome back, folks. In a landmark June 30th, 2026 Supreme Court decision entitled Trump v. Barbara, the court ruled 6-3 to uphold birthright citizenship, striking down an executive order by President Donald Trump. And here to talk to us about it is Andrew Arthur, otherwise known as Art, resident fellow in Law and Policy Center for Immigration Studies. Art, welcome to the show.
Mills, thanks so much for having me today.
So, Art, if we could, for the benefit of the listening audience, let's start out at a basic level. What is birthright citizenship, and what exactly are the big concerns for the Trump administration and the impetus behind the executive order?
So, just to strip it down to its basic facts, when the Constitution was ratified back in 1789, it uses the term citizen seven times, but never defines who exactly is a citizen. You know, for the earliest decades of this republic, most citizenship determinations were made on the state level. And of course, we didn't have any immigration laws, so people could come in and resettle and become citizens under those state laws. It wasn't until 1857 when the Supreme Court issued Dred Scott versus Sanford, the notorious Dred Scott case, that the federal government ever really got involved in those determinations. And what it what Chief Justice Roger Taney wrote at the time, basically without any proof, was that under the laws of the United States, certain people, specifically enslaved people, African descendants of enslaved people, were not and could not be citizens of the United States. That was a main trigger for the Civil War. And after the war was over, Congress wanted to ensure that freedmen, as they were then known, would be recognized as citizens of the United States. So it passed the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which made clear that all persons born in the United States, not subject to a foreign power, citizens of the United States. That was vetoed by President Johnson. So Congress came back with a constitutional amendment, the 14th Amendment. Section 1 in the 14th Amendment is known as the Citizenship Clause, and it states all persons born and naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the states in which they reside. So it's really that middle clause right there, Newell, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, that, you know, was a kind of a head scratcher in this otherwise clear statement in the Constitution. In 1898, the Supreme Court considered the case of a Chinese man born in San Francisco named Wong Kim Ark, and the government had attempted to keep him out of the United States when he took a brief trip abroad, saying he wasn't a citizen of the United States. He was a Chinese national. He was born to two 19th century versions of green card holders. And the Supreme Court in the Wong case determined that basically everybody who's born here is a citizen, with only narrow exceptions for children of diplomats and those born in zones of foreign occupation or on foreign public ships. And that was the definition that was in place until the 40s, when the Roosevelt administration, Franklin Roosevelt, decided that they needed to be a little bit more clear. And so basically what they said was, if you're born here, you're a citizen, with those exceptions that were recognized in ARC or Wong. So in January of 2025, the president put out an executive order. He's like, no, we need to reconsider this. I don't think that's right. And he directed federal agencies not to recognize as a citizen any child born after the effective date of that executive order. Not, it didn't have any retroactive effect, as a citizen, unless they were born to either United States citizen parents or parent, or a lawful permanent resident, that is green card parent. That was challenged in the courts, went up, and Trump v. Barbara was the case in which the Supreme Court considered a First Circuit opinion that enjoined that Trump executive order. And what the Supreme Court did on Tuesday was it reaffirmed Wong Kim Ark, basically doubled down on the decision and the logic that they had used. That was a 5-4 opinion, four justices joined Chief Justice John Roberts in reaffirming Wong. Justice Kavanaugh would have found that, would have stricken down the executive order, finding that it conflicted with a different provision in the Immigration and Nationality Act. And the three remaining justices more or less found that it would probably be effective with respect to non-immigrants, temporary visitors like tourists and students, but it really wouldn't be effective with respect to those here illegally. And so that's more or less, and I realize that was kind of long, but that's the short version of the story.
No, but it's really is a value because a lot of folks misunderstand, you know, and so we have examples that are you know, kind of curious to me. So let me just play one out with you. We are a port city here in New Orleans. A foreign freighter comes up the river and happens to have crew members that are females who are, in fact, pregnant. They go into labor. They call an ambulance. The ambulance takes them to a hospital. The baby's born in that hospital. Is that baby a U.S. citizen?
Yeah, that baby is a U.S. citizen, as would a similar woman who arrived at Louis Armstrong Airport and went into labor at any point during her visit to the United States, as would any student studying at Tulane who gets pregnant and has a child as a foreign national. All of those kids under Trump v. Barber are United States citizens.
So that kid then, and we know that these crew members on these foreign freighters probably are working for less money and would qualify for federal benefits, whether it be SNAP or whatever it may be. The child would then be an ultimate beneficiary to those federal benefits as a result of being born here in this country.
Absolutely, yeah. No, they get SNAP, they get Medicaid, they get all welfare benefits, and in many instances,
and that child does not have to live in this country in order to receive that, do they?
Nope, they can. That ship can pull out.
So that child gets back on that boat. That child gets back on that boat. They go back to doing business, and the taxpayers of this country are financing that child, who may not ever come back to this country. And that child, there's no requirement like a lot of countries. If you can only be abroad 6 months and you have to come back to your origin country in order to maintain your citizenship. That's not a requirement in the United States, is it?
Nope, not at all. In fact, I can give you one prime example, and that's Anwar al-Awlaki. Al-Awlaki was the spiritual leader of ISIS, but he was born in New Mexico to parents who were here briefly, went back to Yemen, and basically, you know, was the person who spouted the hateful, Islamic propaganda that really inspired the movement that terrorized the Middle East. He was a United States citizen, and you might remember this, Noel, you almost definitely do. It was a big deal when President Obama directed a drone strike killing him because he was a United States citizen, notwithstanding the fact he was also a bloodthirsty terrorist.
So that child then would be the beneficiary of dual citizenship, right?
More yeah, likely absolutely. Than not,
depending on the origin country. That child, as a result of the dual citizenship, receives benefits from the United States and probably, most likely, depending on the origin country, would receive benefits from the origin country as well.
Sure, absolutely.
And in the end, that particular individual would be better off than any other U.S. born to a citizen baby and family than in comparison to this case.
Yeah,
they would be
absolutely.
Better off. See, it's interesting because a lot of folks don't think this through, and you know, and I know what people are going to say. Well, how many of those are there? We don't know. Quite frankly, you know, but in my view, one's too many. You know, if they're going to be able to reap the benefits of two countries' social welfare programs, right, and end up in a better position than a U.S. citizen baby, meaning a baby born to U.S. citizens, I believe that there's something fundamentally wrong with that. And maybe I'm an outlier. But, I mean, you know, the reality is that we're participating in there are people that scheme this, right? So there are those that this happens unintentionally, but this happens intentionally.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, birth tourism is the term that we use. And, you know, there have been many high-profile cases. The Center for Immigration Studies estimates that there are about 20,000 such births. Again, not incidental, people who deliberately come to the United States to give birth here and to get benefits for their U.S. Citizen children per annum. This is a big business tool. And because it's, you know, sketchy and fraudulent and, you know, sort of underhanded, we don't really know how big the problem is. But the Department of Justice announced hours after this opinion was handed down that it was going to begin cracking down on them. Now, remember when you said they get the benefits? Guess what else they get, Noel? They get the burdens. Technically, all of those children are U.S. citizens and therefore have to pay U.S. tax, whether they live here or work here or not. What would be really good is if the IRS decides to get on the case and go after all of those people incidentally born in the United States and living abroad so that the American people can get a little bit back from them, you know, for their trouble. But the reason for birth tourism is because once that child turns 21, remember, there's no residency requirement for it. Once they turn 21, they can then petition for their parents to get green cards, move here, become citizens, bring over mom and dad and the brother and the nephews. That's, you know, how family-based migration, or what some people call chain migration, begins. This is a prime example of it.
So the whole nature of what, you know, when the decision was made centuries, you know, several hundred years ago in these cases, and then reaffirmed in more recent time, the migration of folks is completely different today. The manner in which people move around the world today is completely different. The manner in which goods and services is maybe not different. The modalities are the same, but the speed in which they do so is a lot different. And to live outside these borders and avail yourself of all the resources that you get as a result of being born in this country is relatively easy. You know, so you get to cherry pick the best and the worst of what this country has to offer, and you get to cherry pick around the best and the worst of what the origin country has to offer. And again, when I go to this balance of interests calculation, for me, we're out of whack. I mean,
No doubt about it. But here's the good news, Noel. You could be a Supreme Court justice, because Justice Kavanaugh said almost exactly the same things. You know, history changed, and it's appropriate for the court to consider the changes that have taken. Again, none of us, you know, no conservative likes a living constitution, because that's the government's hand in your pocket. But, you know, Kavanaugh says it's appropriate to take notice of the changes in the modalities of transportation and the ease with which individuals can now come to the United States, you know, unlike in 1868 when the 14th Amendment was passed, or, you know, 1898 when Wong was issued. But, you know, the rest of the justices, the majority, didn't think that was important at all. And so that's what you got.
Yeah, I got a text like this: when Medicaid is a state entitlement, how could someone not living here get a state entitlement? Well, the thing is if they're born in this state, they're presumed to be a resident of the state, right?
Sure. They can fly back to the United States, check into any hospital in New Orleans or Louisiana, and get free medical care. They're entitled to it. It's an entitlement.
Yeah, absolutely. And the moment in time somebody takes some type of action, remedial action against that individual, they're going to end up in court, and those actions are going to be ruled unconstitutional.
Absolutely.
That's the natural flow of this. Yeah.
Yep.
It's interesting. I mean, you know, it's certainly a challenge, and I try to understand both sides, but anytime again, not to repeat myself, where we as children born to U.S. citizens are at a disadvantage to others, I think there's something fundamentally wrong with that whole situation. But that's just me. Art, as always, Andrew Arthur, resident fellow in law and policy for the Center for Immigration Studies. You're all over this issue. We truly appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a wonderful 4th of July weekend.
The same to you, Nolan. The same to all of your listeners. Happy 4th.
Thank you so much, sir. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.